Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbets.
Howdy doody, lemon fruity. How's everybody doing today? This is Colin McCallan. I am here with my partner, Russell Hebbets. And of course, we're bringing the noise for the best darn legal podcast out there. Of course, I'm talking about the Is This Legal podcast. That's my own opinion, by the way, not anyone else's. But we're the best podcast out there, Russ, right?
East and west of the Mississippi.
East and west, north and south, I actually might venture to say, too. Our friends in Mexico and Canada are really struggling to find a legal podcast of our caliber, and they haven't yet, to my knowledge.
Well, I tell you,
I haven't been looking, but
we are international. We get some plays from kind of everywhere out there.
Yeah, and that reminds me, hello to all of our listeners in the Netherlands. We see you. We hear you. Thanks for tuning in. Russ, how you doing today, man?
I'm having a great day.
Having a great day?
I'm excited to talk some self-defense, Colin.
Yes. You know, and I'm amazed. This is the 42nd episode we've done, and we have covered this really interesting topic very little in the past. And we thought it was actually really appropriate to discuss the defense of self-defense, which in what we're talking about here, of course, is a legal theory that a person is justified in using physical force, possibly even deadly force, in order to thwart a threat to them.
Or to
their property.
Right.
And we have kind of a new case in Denver that has captured certainly a lot of local media attention. It might even be getting more national attention. But it deals with these issues of self-defense. And Russ, I would like you to tell us what happened last weekend downtown Denver that led to this case.
So Denver, like many cities in the U.S., has been seeing quite a lot of protests. And whether that is Black Lives Matter protests or protests over some police killings
or the pandemic,
mask rallies, patriot rallies. So that's what this was. Downtown Denver last weekend, there were two groups of protesters, one a right-wing protest group and one a left-wing protest group. And as you might imagine, they did not mix nicely.
They don't always get along, unfortunately.
So you have a guy named Lee Keltner, who was attending the Patriot Rally. So that is a right-wing organization. And he was there, and he was exercising his First Amendment rights, and he was getting into it with a Black Lives Matter protester. And it garnered a group of people around watching this altercation. One of those people who was around was a local TV producer, Denver Channel 9 News. A producer from that local television station was there, and he was recording with his phone. Now, he also had security there because the TV station wants to take care of its people, so he had a armed security guard with him who was tasked with protecting him. Lee Keltner broke off from the altercation with a Black Lives Matter protester and went up to the producer and said something to the effect of, "Get that effing video off or I'm going to F you up." And he actually made physical contact and pushed the phone away.
Pushed the phone that the producer was holding.
Exactly,
okay.
That the 9 News producer was holding. At that point, the security guard who was tasked with protecting him stepped in front of the producer, put himself in between the producer and Lee Keltner, and confronted Lee Keltner. Lee Keltner then swung and smacked open-faced the security guard,
whose name is Matt Dolhoff, just so we're going to keep the party straight.
Yep. So Matt Dolhoff gets smacked, gets his glasses knocked off his face. Lee Keltner then pulls out a canister of pepper spray. Matt Dolhoff then pulls out a firearm that he had. And we're not sure exactly what happened first, but the pepper spray got discharged. and Matt Dolhoff shot. He shot one shot, striking and killing Lee Keltner. Now, this is a really unusual case, Colin, because everything was documented.
Yeah.
We have video. We have the producer's iPhone video from before he was struck and then 12 seconds later. Then we have someone else.
There was a Denver Post reporter on scene, a woman, and she captured every single thing that happened in a bunch of, in about 77 still photographs. If you go to the Denver Post website, I looked this morning, it's still up on the front page. You can actually watch the photos and watch this whole thing go down.
It's astounding to have such excellent physical evidence.
Yeah, I mean, it's really undisputed what happened.
Right,
I mean,
and this is a professional photographer.
Right.
So it's undisputed what happened, but it's still not, it still is very much in dispute what is going to happen.
Right. So in terms of where things are, and I think you guys see where this is going in terms of self-defense, Matthew Dolhoff is currently being held in the Denver County Jail, but he has not yet been charged as of what today's the October 15th. He is pending charges or being investigated for charges related to first degree murder. But we want to examine whether or not in this particular case, and we're going to talk about other cases as well, whether or not there's a really good claim for self-defense here.
So before we dive into self-defense, Colin, how is it possible he's sitting in custody? Because he's in custody. He has a no bond hold, which means he cannot get out of custody, but he hasn't been charged yet. He hasn't been charged. He's just under investigation of first degree murder. How can that happen?
That can happen in the very early stages of an investigation. Basically, I think at a minimum right now, the police have probable cause that a crime was committed. And when they have that, they're allowed to make an arrest and they can detain a person. They're usually only required to hold a person in custody for 72 days.
72 hours.
I'm sorry.
That would be a long time.
Only we'll 72
get,
days.
We'll get back to you in a couple
we'll
months.
We'll talk to you in January. Here. Yeah. No, I meant that was, that's correct. It was 72 hours. And he's actually been held longer than that because the prosecutor does actually, they can ask for a couple of extensions while they're reviewing the evidence. And frankly, the charge is so serious that judges will allow that investigation to happen and will continue to hold him. But this is, there's going to be a charging decision on this soon.
Very soon. I honestly would expect one today or tomorrow at the latest.
Yeah. And so, you know, we would like to focus on the self-defense aspect of this case, really from the eyes of the possibly soon-to-be defendant security guard, Matt Dolhoff. We're going to look at what he was able to do, what he wasn't able to do, what he, you know, whether or not it matters, what he believed at the time. Those are the kind of concepts we're going to be talking about, right?
Yeah, and a lot of these concepts apply nationally. We're going to be using some specific Colorado examples of Colorado law, but most states are very similar in how they structure self-defense claims. So let's talk about deadly force first, because this was deadly force. This was a gunfire that killed him.
Right.
So you can only use, you're only justified in using deadly force in self-defense if using less force would not be sufficient and a reasonable person or someone else in that position would believe that someone is under the immediate threat of death or great bodily injury.
Right.
So there's a couple of prongs there that have to happen before you can be justified in using lethal force, right?
Right. Let's start with situations where a person has, I guess, has this defense at their strongest, where a person actually can claim self-defense in the strongest manner possible. You all might have heard of a Make My Day law. I honestly don't know why it's called that, because it usually applies to when you're in your house and you can defend your house. It came from a Dirty Harry movie that Clint Eastwood was in. Russ and I actually just watched the clip. It's a little dated,
but it's very entertaining.
It's entertaining.
Like, I recommend it.
You know, but essentially Dirty Harry is trying to thwart a robbery in a diner, and ends up shooting three people who were the perpetrators before famously saying, "Go ahead, make my day."
And that guy did not get his day made. Right. Yeah. The bad guy, the purported bad guy put down his gun.
He saw Clint's friends Smith and Wesson and decided to get out of there. But the make my day law, as we traditionally use it in I guess legal parlance, is where we have a homeowner usually or an occupant of a house. It's got to be a dwelling. Okay, right. So someone's at their house and someone has broken into their house, and the occupant of the home reasonably believes that the intruder is going to commit some sort of crime in the house.
So let's kind of break this down more easily. Like it's Cornelius's house, right? Because Jebediah is a bad seed, yep. And Jebediah comes in and breaks into Cornelius's house. That alone, if Jebediah just kicks down the door and comes in, that's not enough to use deadly force,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Why not?
That's still a trespass.
Right.
But the law, at least here in Colorado and in other states, requires that the intruder take one more step. He either has to look like he's going to attack the occupant or commit some sort of crime in the house. Maybe theft, maybe criminal mischief, destruction of property, something.
It can be anything. Doesn't have to be violent. Doesn't have to be anything that rises to a level that most people would think is serious. So you could, for example, have a breakup where a woman is at home and her ex-boyfriend breaks into the house to go take a picture that he gave of her and tear it up because he doesn't want any pictures of them together. She is justified at that point in just opening fire.
Yeah, because he broke in and he destroyed her property. Yes. That's destruction of property. But if the guy just broke in because he wanted to smell the apartment one more time and get a whiff of her perfume or something for old time's sake.
Which is creepy.
Which is totally weird. But she wouldn't be justified in shooting him because he didn't commit a crime beyond the illegal break-in.
Right.
So this is where, but basically in any of those situations, the occupant of the home is able to use deadly force against the intruder, whether the intruder has a weapon or is planning on attempting to hurt or kill someone else in the house.
None of that matters. Okay? None of that matters.
Now, obviously, so that's, we at least wanted to start there because that's where a person has their strongest claim of self-defense, is in a dwelling. You have a little bit less ability to use self-defense if you are a business owner, for example, and protecting yourself against someone who's intruding against your business. You still can use an appropriate level of force, though, to get that person away and to, I guess, extinguish the threat. But let's bring it back to this case, Russ.
So
this didn't happen in a building. This didn't happen in a home. This happened in the middle of a public street.
Right. And so the kind of benchmark standard for using self-defense is proportionality. Okay, the amount of force you use has to be proportional to the amount of force that is going to be used against you or that you reasonably believe may be used against you.
Right.
So if that level of force is not commensurate, if it's not on the same footing, you cannot use it. So for example, I come up to you, Colin, and I say, I put my dukes up,
mm-hmm.
and I say, I'm going to crack you in the jaw. And you're going down like a sack of potatoes.
would you really say that?
That's my favorite line.
I wouldn't be afraid of that at all. Most, I mean, I would just kind of start laughing.
You're unusual because most people, when I say that, they're out of
they're
here.
They're cowering in fear. Like, dude.
I probably use that once a week. And they're like, oh man, it's the potato guy. But anyway, now, if we're in that scenario, would you, Colin, would you be able to pull out your 9-inch hunting knife?
After I stopped laughing hysterically and mocked you a few times, I would most likely, here's what I would be able to do. I might be able to sock you one in the face.
Right.
You know, if I felt like you were actually going to punch me or hurt me, I might be able to defend myself in that sense. What I would not be able to do is take out my 6-inch Bowie knife and go up to you and stab you. I would not be able to take out my 9mm handgun and shoot you just because you utter those, and it's all due to that word proportionality.
Right.
That would be a completely inequitable response to the threat that was posed to me. So that's, and real quick, I want to address one thing that we talked about. One thing I want to mention, some states have different laws on this. Like some of you may have, you remember that George Zimmerman case a few years ago where George Zimmerman was, I think he was a security guard or something. And he shot and killed Trayvon Martin. He basically was investigating Trayvon Martin. He thought he was up to no good.
He was the captain of the neighborhood watch.
Is that what it was? It was something.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It wasn't as formal as security, man.
Right. But in that case, one of the reasons why I think he won at trial when he was prosecuted for murder was because in Florida, they have something called a stand your ground law, which takes this notion of the make my day law and basically says it follows you wherever you go. So basically, if you have a threat, you're almost able to behave just like you were in your home, and you can stand your ground and defend yourself. We are not a stand your ground state here in Colorado. In fact, most states are not. They only have that special heightened circumstances if a person is in their home defending from an intruder.
Right. And so we're not a stand your ground state that extends the home to everywhere, essentially. However, we're also not a duty to retreat state. You know, you don't have a duty to retreat. Like in this scenario, in the Matt Doloff case at the protester, like he and the producer could have turned and walked away.
Absolutely.
They could have just gone. You don't have a duty to do that.
Right.
You don't have a duty to disengage. But you do have a duty to only use the amount of force that's proportional. Now, we said the standard is, you know, we said you reasonably believe that you're going to get hit, right? That's an objective standard. That is what a reasonable person in your shoes believes. So if you're, let's say you're approached by a quadriplegic who comes up in their wheelchair and says, I'm going to kick your ass, right? If you are like a really nervous person and you somehow think that's going to happen, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, if you hit that person, you're going to get charged with assault.
Exactly.
What would a reasonable person believe in that? Would a reasonable person believe that that person is a threat to them?
Right.
Probably not.
And so that's the standard by which all of these self-defense claims are judged. Now, so let's go back to this case with a protester. Let's go back to the Matt Doloff, Lee Keltner case. Because, you know, we said, would less force be sufficient? Is there a reasonable belief that someone's under the imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury? In this case, as the producer is being contacted by the police, he is telling the police, my security guard just saved my life. That guy was going to get me. And to be fair, Lee Keltner did say, I'm going to F you up.
I think that his actions immediately before this are going to be very, very important, because one of the things that a jury in hearing this case is going to have to kind of size up is, was Lee Keltner a threat and was he a deadly threat?
Right.
And, you know, there's another aspect of this whole thing. We know, hindsight being what it is after the investigation happened, Lee Keltner did not have a deadly weapon on him.
Right.
He did not have a firearm.
He had pepper spray.
He had pepper spray. However, he was the initial aggressor. And by the way, that matters in Colorado. You cannot claim self-defense if you are the initial aggressor to the party. In other words, if you go up and punch somebody, if Cornelius goes up and punches Jebediah and Jebediah punches him right back, Cornelius can't say, hey, wait a minute. I was acting in self-defense. No, he was the initial aggressor.
And that's most states has that distinction. The only way you get around that is if you try to disengage and you make it known that you're trying to disengage. So you can save it.
Like if they were running. I mean, if they turn around and running, you don't even have to say I'm disengaging. Your behavior can evidence that for you.
Exactly. So if Jebediah hits Cornelius and then gets a look of panic on his face and turns and starts taking off, Cornelius can't then chase down Jebediah and kick the living hell out of him, because at that point he has disengaged despite being the initial aggressor.
Exactly. So coming back to this case, you know, we have to look at the actions of Mr. Keltner to figure out, okay, how dangerous is this person? What kind of a threat is he posing? And, you know, again, this is undisputed. He strikes the producer's phone away, and he absolutely strikes his soon-to-be killer.
And he makes verbal threats.
And he's making verbal threats like, I'm going to F you up.
Yep.
You know, look, there's no two ways about it. This is at a protest rally when emotions are running high.
Right.
And then, so after Keltner smacks the security guard, Dolhoff, in the face, he then takes out his pepper spray canister and deploys it. And it shoots out, you can see all of it, it shoots out this huge plume of yellow pepper spray. And almost immediately thereafter is when the security guard draws his weapon, fires once, and basically ends Mr. Keltner's life and the threat.
Right. So the question is about that threat, right?
Right.
So that threat. So is, first, if Dolhoff can establish that he thought that pepper spray was a gun, he's in good shape.
You know, it's interesting. So if you, again, all of the video does not lie. It really shows you everything that's going on here. Keltner is heavily clothed. That's the best way I can put it. He's wearing a lot of clothes. He's got on a t-shirt. He's got on like a motorcycle vest. He's kind of a bigger guy. He's got pants on. He had a lot of pockets. Is it arguable that the security guard thought that he might be going for a deadly weapon?
Right.
That's something that that came out during this investigation, is the security guard thought that maybe in addition to the pepper spray, he had access to another deadly weapon or something, which was why he fired his gun and shot this guy.
And
Go ahead. And
that would be a good defense. The media that has been released on this so far does not bear that out that well.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, it's a reasonable person standard. It's not a Dolhoff standard.
Right. Well, and let's talk about the pepper spray for a second. Pepper spray is generally associated with a non-lethal type of force. I mean, honestly, it's one of the reasons that it's used by police officers. It's kind of like a taser in that sense. It's a way to incapacitate a threat without causing any long-term harm to that person. And so, you know, can it be argued that maybe, can Dolhoff argue, look, he hit me in the face and he sprayed pepper spray at me. And it's not like he sprayed him right in the eyeballs, by the way. He was about 7 or 8 feet away from him when he deployed the pepper spray. You know, can he assert that that was deadly force? I don't think so. That's a tough sell.
Okay, so if he can't assert that that's deadly force, pepper spray is not deadly force, almost by definition, what about great bodily injury? Because it doesn't have to be death. You're allowed to use deadly force if you are in fear that you or someone else is under the threat of great bodily injury.
Well, and Russ, you just said the magic word. You said great bodily injury as opposed from regular bodily injury. This would have required deadly force requires the actor to believe, okay, I could get dead here. I could get killed or very seriously injured or maimed by the threat that this person is posing. It's not enough to say, oh, he could cause me injury. He might hit me in the face and give me a black eye. So, you know, these things really matter, these details.
All right. So what about if Keltner, the protester, was 2 inches away from Dolhoff's eyes and was going to spray bear spray into his eyes?
I am assuming that's something that could cause lasting injury to his eyes, maybe.
I would assume so. I mean, I'm no bear spray expert, but I sure wouldn't want to get hit with bear spray from 2 inches away. I would think that could blind you.
Yeah, I would think so. And again, I mean, it kind of goes back. Would it be reasonable for Dolhoff to, at that point, decide, I need to shoot this guy?
And that, ladies and gentlemen, are why we have juries.
right.
Because that's what it ultimately comes down to.
Well, and I'll tell you, folks, I mean, a picture is worth 1,000 words. And in this particular case, we actually have several pictures. We really got a video. And I mean, we're trying to break this down in as basic concrete terms as possible. But clearly, a case like this is going to elicit an emotional reaction from anybody who sees it. I mean, this is a tough video to watch. Right. And, you know, it goes beyond politics. It's a tragedy. It's something terrible happened. A man is dead who probably doesn't need to be dead. And, you know, there's really going to be a lot of scrutiny on what these people were doing. And there's going to be a huge subjective component, even though we're kind of trying to talk about it objectively.
Right. And that's why charges haven't even been filed yet, right? Because everyone knows exactly what happens and there is an agreement. So let's talk about some other examples. We've had this come up in Denver. We actually, as a firm, have had cases similar to this.
Yeah.
There have been some people who have driven through protests, okay? And they've driven through protests, and this has happened in multiple cities, so maybe in your city this has happened as well. And sometimes someone gets injured.
And there's usually two versions of events. The protesters being driven into usually say, this guy maliciously tried to target us and drove his vehicle into us. He tried to kill us. Oftentimes the offender behind the wheel will say something like, I was driving my car down the road. I had a political sticker on the back of my car. I got swarmed by a bunch of people. I was in fear that I was going to be killed, so I gunned my car to get out of there. I was not trying to hurt anybody.
Right, and we're not talking about the case where the guy plows into a crowd of people going 50 miles an hour.
That's not what we're talking about. We're kind of talking about the situation where a person is swarmed, and then you know you see the video footage of him trying to get away, and in doing so, takes out some protesters.
Right, so this happened in Denver. Big protest, and one of the protesters...
Twice it happened in Denver. Once in Aurora, once in Denver.
Right,
In the wake of all these protests, that's right.
Right. So the Denver one, he didn't actually hit anyone or run over anyone, but someone jumped off an overpass to get away from him as he was driving away and broke her leg. So there was a significant injury. In that case, no charges were filed. And it's exactly what you said. It's because he was surrounded and... He had no intent, and if you want to dive into intent, people, go back and listen to But I Didn't Mean to Kill Anyone, which is a previous podcast of ours, which talks all about mental state.
It's one of our better ones.
It's a good one. Well, they're all good. What do you mean?
What am I talking about? I mean, they're all, it's all liquid gold.
Man. Don't go start at number one. Don't stop for about a week. All right, straight. But anyway, so like in a situation like that, you have to have a right to get out of that dangerous situation, especially if you're not intending to use that vehicle as a deadly weapon, which it can be.
That's right. Now, here's one more other common situation that we've seen before on this topic of self-defense. Let's take Jebediah and Cornelius again. Why not?
Happens all the time with them.
You guys know. You listeners know. So let's just say Jebediah is always carrying around a 3-inch pocket knife. It's a utility knife. He's always got it on him. Many of you might do that yourselves. And, you know, he sees Cornelius and, they hate each other. They're in a parking lot and they start jiving at each other. They start talking and
talking some of that jive turkey.
Talking some of that.
Yeah, I know how it goes. Cornelius can talk some jive turkey. Yeah.
And they all get stirred up. And Cornelius just starts wailing on Jebediah. Cornelius is unarmed. He doesn't have a weapon. But he starts beating up Jebediah, gets him on the ground, and is just pummeling him. Okay? Jebediah, while he's on the ground, reaches and he grabs his 3-inch pocket knife. And he slices at Jebediah, nicks him in the throat.
Catches an artery.
I'm sorry. He slices Cornelius.
Right.
Jebediah is the actor. He slices Nixon artery, and poor Cornelius, there he goes. He just bleeds out right there in the parking lot and dies. What do we think of that situation? I mean, I'm looking at this from the perspective of Cornelius. He's on the ground getting beat up. It's unclear how bad these injuries are. Isn't he allowed to defend himself with a 3-inch pocket knife, Russ?
So I think that all comes down to reasonable belief of an immediate threat of great bodily injury.
And proportionality, right?
And, well, proportionality comes in too, right? Can you use a less severe method of stopping the attack? Clearly, Jebediah is getting his ass handed to him, so he can't, right? His fists are not doing the job, so he has to increase. Then the question because once he introduces that knife, that's lethal force.
Right.
So he needs to justify that, and it has to be because he's in threat of death or great bodily injury. So I think it comes down to how badly is he getting beat. So if he's getting kicked in the head by Cornelius's steel-toed boots, I think he can use the knife and claim self-defense.
Do you think it matters if it's a 3-inch pocket knife versus like a 2-foot-long machete?
Sure.
Is there an argument? Do you think you can ever argue, hey, this was a 3-inch pocket knife. This wasn't deadly force. He wasn't trying to kill him. He was trying to end the threat.
For me, I think that anything that is a 3-inch pocket knife can be deadly.
Yeah.
Right? Just like a machete can be deadly. So I don't think he gets off by that and says this 3-inch knife was not able to inflict deadly force. It clearly was.
Yeah.
You know, now if he instead pulls out, you know, the little knife on nail clippers.
Right.
Maybe he can make that argument.
There might be an argument there, but the law is against him because if yes. a knife can be argued that it's deadly force, yeah. that's probably disproportionate.
Yes. Okay. Yes, exactly. So then he'd have to justify it.
So there you go, folks. We wanted to talk about this topic. You should definitely go to the Denver Post and check this out. Check out those photos if you're interested in this story. It's very tragic, but certainly from a legal case, it's got the attention of Denver and other places. And we're going to continue to watch this very, very carefully.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised it hasn't been picked up nationally.
I am too. I mean, especially with the photos so clear. I mean, it's amazing. And so we'll leave it at that, though. We want to remind you of where you can contact us. We would love to get some feedback from our listeners. How do you like the show? How do you not like the show? Any ideas for future episodes? We'd love to hear them. You can find us on Twitter at IsThisLegalPod. You can find us at Facebook at Hebbets McCallan. That's our Facebook page. We are now streaming on Spotify and some other services.
So we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pandora, and we are now on Google Podcasts as well.
Because they can't just let everybody else have podcasts. Google has to muscle in too, I guess, huh?
Google gets their fingers in everyone's pies.
Yep.
But hey, before we let you go, I wanted to bring up, we got some user feedback from our last episode, and it was from a listener in Littleton, Colorado, Lori from Littleton, Colorado, who has the sharp ears and sharp mind, who brought up our episode when we talked about statutes of limitations. And what we said is that statute of limitations run from the discovery of a crime. That is true for some crimes, but not all. Some crimes, the statute of limitation begins from the commission of a crime. So thank you, Lori, for being on your game. And as always, if anyone else hears something that they have a question about, they have clarification, or they just have something to add like Lori, give us a shout, tweet us, let us know, and we're happy to bring it up on the air and give you a shout out.
Yep.
Thanks again, everyone, and have a great day.
We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Is This Legal? See you next time.